The clipboard is coming around. If you are within 4 hours and can get here in 4 hours, check X on it. We want hundreds to be kneeling, and we want to start kneeling at these fire doors where the monument was brought in and out. Can we prevent the removal of the monument?
That was the Reverend Patrick Mahoney of the Christian Defense Coalition in Montgomery, Alabama, yesterday. He was urging people to sign up and to continue to protest and try and block the removal of a monument that is a 3-foot-high granite monument depicting two tablets. On those two tablets, inscribed in English, the Ten Commandments. Now, this is a story that's been very hot today because, as I read in the Washington Post, jurist defies deadline on monument, $5,000 a day fines may begin. Well, Justice Roy Moore says the monument will stay if it's up to him, and he's willing to defy even the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama. We're going to be talking about that during this last hour of Issues, Etc. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery joins us to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to stay an order to remove the Ten Commandments in Alabama at their judicial building. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a regular guest here on Issues, Etc. He is Professor Emeritus at the University of Luton in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States as well. He's Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and the History of Christian Thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including one called Christ, Our Advocate. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Always a great pleasure.
Dr. Montgomery, this seems to be a big question right now in the argument being made in favor of keeping the Ten Commandments in the Alabama courthouse. Is the American justice system based upon the Ten Commandments?
No, it's not based on the Ten Commandments at all. It's based upon the tradition of the common law, which of course benefits from the historic Christian tradition tremendously. But the Ten Commandments as such are not part of American law. And the reason why the Supreme Court will not stay the removal of this 5,300-pound granite monument is simply that the Ten Commandments have been given in the Judeo-Christian scriptures, and therefore they are contextually supportive of Judaism and Christianity. And the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States states very clearly that there is a separation of church and state, that there is no possibility of establishing a single religious position. So if Judge Roy Moore were allowed to retain this monument, that would mean that the judicial system was in some way directly supporting particular religious positions, namely Judaism and or Christianity. And that is precisely what the Bill of Rights will not permit. We may not like it, but that happens to be the constitutional position.
Now, you said something there that would probably raise the ire of many as they hear it, and that is, you said that the U.S. Constitution does establish a separation of church and state with regard to the establishment of a religion. That would be the First Amendment is there. Someone's going to argue, look, the words separation of church and state appear nowhere in the U.S. Constitution. How can you say such a thing then?
Well, that's perfectly correct that those words don't appear in the Constitution itself. But the First Amendment says that there shall be no establishment of religion. That's as clear as it can be. That means that a particular religious position, whether Christianity or Buddhism or Christian Science or whatever, may not be supported directly by the government or by its agencies. And if we're allowed to put up artistic representations at public expense that represent a particular religious position, then we're clearly violating this. People like Pastor Mahoney are living in an utterly naive situation. They think that somehow biblical religion is the religion of the United States, and therefore it is perfectly legitimate for Roy Moore to put up the Ten Commandments. Now, biblical religion is not established any more than any other religion is established. Buddhism is not established. Hinduism is not established. The Islam is not established, and neither is Christianity. What the U.S. Constitution does is to give everyone in the United States a level playing field on which to present their religious claims. And if Pastor Mahoney had the brains he was born with, he would use this opportunity to preach the gospel. People have never been saved by the Ten Commandments. They never will be saved by the Ten Commandments. And the opportunity is provided in the United States more than in any other country in the world to offer the saving grace of Jesus Christ to sinners. That's the way to fulfill the Christian commitment. It is not fulfilling the Christian commitment on any level whatsoever to insist that the Ten Commandments be put up on in a public courthouse.
Does it strike you as odd, Dr. Montgomery, that very often the Christians who get up in arms about the refusal of the courts to allow such displays of the Ten Commandments, they are willing to stand up for the display of the Ten Commandments in a courthouse, but they sit idly by while in their own churches the gospel is taken from them by their very own pastors?
Well, sure. This is quite right. And it is one of the worst characteristics of American evangelicalism that they are so utterly naive in areas like this. I give you another example of this. There is an organization called Advocates International. And the head of this is a lawyer by the name of Sam Erickson. And I've had discussions with this man. He thinks that the answer to the secularism that exists in the United States and throughout the world is to put the golden rule up on classroom walls so that in education throughout the United States and throughout the world you have the golden rule presented. I mean, this is an utter and hopeless confusion of law and gospel. The Golden Rule tells us that we should be nice to other people, and the Ten Commandments tell us that there are various ethical principles which we should maintain. Wonderful. But nobody has ever been saved by fulfilling commandments or by following the Golden Rule. The fact is that the human race consists of people who are so self-centered, including yourself and myself, that we do not do these things, and we are going to be damned in eternity on the basis of that sort of thing. That's exactly why Jesus Christ came to earth, died on the cross, and rose again from the dead to save us poor, miserable, self-centered sinners in situations where we could never save ourselves. And I cannot fathom why the evangelical community that supposedly is standing for the evangel, the gospel, cannot make a distinction between following law and trying to get other people to follow law on the one hand and accepting the grace of Jesus Christ, which is the only means by which we can save ourselves.
I was listening to a radio program that was dealing with this earlier today, and the guest host there was talking about, well, you know, this judge, Moore, he really ought to be obeying the higher courts. And I think that was a good point he made. But then he went on to say, but the Ten Commandments are the basis for law in the United States. Then he got a call from someone, sounded almost like an Issues Etc. listener, who asked him to name the Ten Commandments. And he couldn't.
And then really?
Yeah, then that caller went on to say, are you aware of the fact that the first three or four, depending on how you count them, the first three of these Ten Commandments are explicitly religious, calling upon people, demanding that people worship the true God revealed, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and no other gods? And he said, well, that's just your interpretation of those first three commandments. Is there a problem, Dr. Montgomery, with the Ten Commandments in a courtroom, if only for the reason that the first three call upon all men to worship an explicitly and a definite, specific God?
Well, of course there is. And these first three or four commandments, depending on how you number them, are definitely directed vertically. They're directed to the God of the universe. It's only the remaining commandments that appear to be horizontal, the ethical, dealing with interrelationships of human beings. But the grounding, even of those anthropocentric commandments is certainly in one's relationship with God. The commandment begins with, you shall worship the Lord your God and only him. And you shall keep the name of the Lord, shall not take the name of the Lord in vain, and you shall keep the Sabbath day, etc. I mean, these are obviously referring to the God of the Bible, as they certainly should. But the point is that it is not the function of secular government in the United States to sustain this. It is the function of secular government to maintain that level playing field in an absence of discrimination so that people can present their religious claims. And if Christians could get it straight that their religious claims are the only ones that really have a solid foundation in Revelation. They're the only ones that can be supported, and therefore all they need is the level playing field. They need only that. Then they can go out and they can present the position and the arguments for this position in a way infinitely more powerful than anyone else. Why? It must be sheer cowardice or sheer lack of realization of the power of the scriptures and of the gospel that bring evangelical Christians to think that unless the government supports them, they're not going to get anywhere at all. I mean, it seems to me this is a clear indication that their faith doesn't lie in the gospel or in the scriptures. It lies somehow in government.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to stay in order to remove the Ten Commandment monument from Alabama's judicial building. If you'd like to call in, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Montgomery, very quickly, how do you respond to another argument that is circulating today over here? And that is, look, the U.S. Supreme Court, you've actually been in the chamber, the U.S. Supreme Court has inside its building on a frieze on the wall an image of Moses holding the very tablets of the Ten Commandments, among other things.
Well, the fact of the matter is that there are aesthetic areas in which the application of the principle of no establishment of religion sits lightly. There's no question about this. On the coins in God we trust, we have a chaplain to the Senate. We have military chaplains and so forth. There isn't a tight logical line that absolutely eliminates any of this. My late nemesis, Madeline Murray O'Hare, after she had gotten prayer out of the public schools, which was perfectly correct in terms of the First Amendment, tried to get rid of "In God We Trust" on the coinage. And the Supreme Court said, nonsense, we're not going to bother with this. There are certainly peripheral areas where there is not going to be a strict application of the Establishment Clause. But that doesn't mean that today, in the 21st century, with the diversity of religions in the United States, that it's going to be possible to extend this situation in behalf of Christianity. And evangelical Christians who think that they can do that are crazy. They're not going to succeed legally, constitutionally, and the worst part about it is that it indicates that they are not understanding the opportunity that is provided in an open religious situation in the United States. If they understood this, they would be out providing an effective preaching of the gospel. Instead of putting on this wretched website in support for Roy Moore, mobilizing pastors to civic action. Listen, pastors should be mobilized to preach the gospel. They are not to be mobilized for civic action. The function of the pastorate is not civic action, surprise, surprise. The function of the ministry happens to be to preach the gospel to every creature.
Now, Dr. Montgomery, there seems to be two extreme positions on these issues of church and state. One is the one that you've outlined very, very well there by way of criticism, the Christian fundamentalist position. The other one is that of the American Civil Liberties Union and others, where they say there can be no nexus, period. We do have to get all these things off the coin. We do have to eradicate all religious imagery, especially that of Christianity, from public life. Where are both of these groups wrong?
Well, we've already talked about the first group and their problems. The difficulty with the ACLU, of course, is that they are trying to say that the fact that you can't establish a given religious position should also mean that religious positions are not allowed to have any influence in public life. And that, of course, is not at all what is being said by the anti-establishment clause. There are two aspects to the establishment clause. One of them is you can't establish any particular religion, but the other is that you have the freedom to express yourself as fully as a democratic society allows. And that means that Christians certainly have every right, for example, to present within the educational system, the case for Christianity, the influence of Christianity through the centuries. This is part of the historic heritage of the West. And when the ACLU tries to intimidate teachers and tell them that they can't even speak about Christianity in the schools, they're taking the opposite extreme, and that needs to be litigated. That's exactly the kind of thing that when I was in the States, I used to do. When ACLU people would come to the president of the school board and say, ha, teacher X is actually talking about Christianity, I would go in and I would say, fine, and that's exactly what the teacher has a right to do, and we'd just love to litigate this right to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Let's go to the phones, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. First up calling from his car is Kevin. Kevin, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Two questions for your guest. I got in on the discussion kind of late, so maybe you've covered these. But one is, it's my understanding that when you go to court and testify, they typically ask you to put your hand on the Bible and swear that you're going to tell the truth. There's a use of a Bible, a specific religion, where the court seems to deem that as a valuable thing. The other point would be, I always kind of assume that law, all human law, is based on the assumption that there is a God who has established a sense of justice and put that in our hearts, in the least. Therefore, a reference to this particular God doesn't seem to be, the fact that we use the Bible to swear people in and that all law is based on divine being, it doesn't seem like this display down there is contrary to the assumptions behind the court system.
Kevin, thank you very much. Two good questions. First of all, I was in court yesterday, by the way. I think it was yesterday.
They finally caught you.
Yeah, they finally did, and I was sworn in as a witness without a Bible. I simply raised my hand, but the oath did end, and this was in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, state of Missouri. So help me God, that's how the oath ended. What about this issue of the swearing on the Bible that Kevin?
Sure,
raised?
That's a traditional formulation, and normally a person will swear on the Bible, but if the person maintains another religious position, then they are not asked to do that. They are provided with the holy book, or they provide themselves with a holy book that is appropriate to their religion. For example, a Muslim would swear on the Quran. So this does not establish Christianity. It simply says that one should swear in such a way as to indicate the utter seriousness of the oath that the person is taking. The caller is quite right that there is an underlying assumption of divine judgment and absolute morality behind legal systems, but that's not the same thing as establishing a particular religion within the United States. Traditionally, of course, in the historical origins, the Christian religion has been the dominant position in the United States, but there is not a single mention of Jesus Christ in any of the founding documents of the United States, and there is this clear statement in the First Amendment that no religion should be established. And if that's the case, that's the case. I happen to be an English subject. I'm a servant of Her Majesty as well as an American citizen. I have a dual citizenship. And here in England, the situation is not like that. In the United States, there is this separation of church and state. In England, there is not. in England, the Reformed branch of the Holy Catholic Church is established. The Queen is the head of the Anglican Church, which is, in principle at least, an Orthodox Christian church. So here, the style is different. But I think we've got to understand as Christians that we must function within the constitutional limits of our society. Here in England, there are not as wonderful opportunities for the preaching of the gospel as exist in the United States. For example, here, you cannot have any religious television stations. They are not allowed. Now, of course, you might say, considering the quality of some of the American TV evangelists, that might be a benefit. But the fact is that there is a limitation of that kind. In the United States, it's an open playing field, as we've said. And Christians, if they had the brains they were born with, would stop criticizing things like the removal of this 5,300-pound granite monument and spend their time preaching the gospel.
What do the rest of you think about this Ten Commandment monument in Alabama? Feel free to give us a call at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Jerry is calling from South County. Jerry, our time is very short. Thank you for calling.
Well, Todd, and to your guest, I agree with him. Unfortunately, all Christians, we would really like to see those Ten Commandments in front of every courthouse, but unfortunately, he reads the Constitution that we all have freedom of whatever religion we choose. So I agree, federal buildings should be secular in order that we don't have to represent all the Buddhas and whatever else in front of them. Also, we don't want Islamic law declared across our land 5 years from now if the Supreme Court decides on that, or we have a Muslim president. So I think we have to go with the secular, and I hope that Judge Moore can. I know he has to stay with his stand. He made a statement. He can't back down. But I hope that maybe the commandments can be moved to a large church in Alabama. Or I even heard they might put it on the side of the building.
Jerry, our time is short, and thank you very much. Dr. Montgomery, before you answer her question, we only have a few minutes, would you be willing to stick around a little bit after this break with us?
Why, certainly. Have I ever denied you anything?
Never, ever have you. You've always been very generous with your precious time. You have 1 minute before we go to this break to respond to Jerry's sentiments there.
Well, I agree with her entirely. I think she's right, and she points out a further consideration that if it were possible to have a mixing or blending of church and state, then what? In Boston, you're going to have Christian Scientists presenting their positions at public expense, and probably in San Francisco, you're going to have Anton LaVey and the Satanists insisting upon their position at public expense. The mess is potentially gigantic.
When we come back from this break, a few more minutes with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery as we talk about the U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to stay in order to remove the Ten Commandments in Alabama's judicial building. I'd like to hear from the rest of you on this issue. Call during this break. It's a great, convenient amount of time to call 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. When we come back from this break, the term separation of church and state is not in the U.S. Constitution. It actually comes from a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote. It strikes me as odd that those who are very willing to quote Thomas Jefferson favorably when he writes about putting the Bible in school as part of the literature curriculum are not so favorable about quoting Thomas Jefferson in that letter on the separation of church and state. It was obviously Jefferson's thinking, maybe not all of the founders' thinking. We'll be talking about that phrase a little bit more when we come back from this break.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Why are the sermons and songs in many evangelical churches more about the Christian than the Christ? What does it mean to be truly evangelical? Can a crossless Christianity ever be truly evangelical? Hi, I'm Todd Wilkin, host of Issues, Etc. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for August is called The Defense Never Rests by Craig Parton. You can order this powerful critique of American Christianity by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or order The Defense Never Rests online at issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, The Defense Never Rests. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Sheep, evolution proof or spoof?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the best-selling book, The Lie, Evolution. Well, Ken, I understand that Ancon sheep have been used as a supposed proof of evolution ever since Darwin's time.
Well, yes, that's true, and they still are. In 1791, a Massachusetts farmer began to breed sheep with short legs that couldn't jump over stone fences. They were called Ancon sheep. Now, in The Origin of Species in 1859, Darwin used the Ancon sheep as evidence that some animal variations arose suddenly in one-step rapid evolution. Modern evolutionists, such as Kenneth Miller, continue to use the Ancon sheep as an example of evolutionary jumps. But is it really? The short-legged condition is actually caused by a mutation that's harmful. It results in the failure of the cartilage to form between the joints. With little or no cartilage between the joints and the legs, the sheep can't jump fences, but aren't very mobile either. With predators around, this trait will be fatal to the sheep and eventually lead to extinction. The Ancon mutation is a result of a loss of information. So this is going in the opposite direction of what Molecules to Man evolution requires. Evolution? No. It's just another example of how the curse in Genesis 3 continues to take its toll on a once perfect creation.
The theory of evolution has led many Christians to doubt the accuracy of Genesis, including the length of the creation days. Ken Ham examines this controversial topic in a free booklet. You can find it at AnswersRadio.com.
AM 850 KSL weather for St. Louis. Excessive heat warning remains in effect for about another half hour. Partly cloudy tonight, a chance for rain and a low of 72. Maybe a chance for rain again tomorrow. Partly cloudy, much cooler at any rate, and a high of 88. Scattered clouds at 531, 102 with a heat index of 110. In traffic, northbound 270 at Dorset, heavy traffic in all lanes, then in the right lanes as you approach 70. Eastbound 270 is slow between Lindbergh and Graham Hanley. Southbound 170 is heavy in the right lanes between Brentwood Boulevard and 40. And westbound 40, just after Kings Highway, you'll find heavy traffic out to Hanley. It's crowded 270 to Mason, and the signals are out in both directions at Prospect.
You've heard the saying, all things being equal, friends buy from friends. Well, it gets even better when your friend sells you something for a much lower price than other people are paying. And Lifeline Long Distance is a Christian company. So we'll donate 10% of every long distance call you make for the advancement of the gospel. Hey, after all, what are friends for? Lifeline, long distance with a higher calling.
To sign up for Lifeline Long Distance service and benefit AM 850 KFUO, call 1-800-607-5128.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're in the last hour, last 25 minutes of the program, talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Before we get back to that conversation, something very important, because tomorrow from 3 to 7, there's going to be an event that I'd like to encourage you to attend. And you can get a clean car out of it, too. There's going to be a fundraiser for the son of a regular Issues Etc. listener. You've heard her before. She calls many times. Kathy from St. Charles. Kathy has a son with special needs. And they're going to be having a car wash fundraiser tomorrow from 3 to 7 at 1315 Missouri State Road in Arnold, Missouri. Now, I've had opportunity to meet Kathy and her family when I preached at the congregation she attends up in St. Charles and to see her son. The proceeds of this car wash will go toward a sensory room for Kathy's son. That's tomorrow afternoon from 3 to 7 at 1315 Missouri State Road in Arnold. Now, for those of you who can't show up tomorrow, get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because at the end of the broadcast, I'm going to give you a name and an address where you can send any contribution you'd like to make to help go toward that sensory room for Kathy's son. That's at the end of the broadcast. Get ready to write that down in just a few minutes. We're talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery about the U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to stay in order that a judge remove the commandment monument from the Alabama's judicial building. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. He's professor emeritus at the University of Luton in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the U.S. Supreme Court. He's distinguished professor of apologetics and the history of Christian thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including one called Christ, Our Advocate. Dr. Montgomery, you also are the professor in residence at the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights that held every year in Strasbourg, France. The academy is over just a few weeks now. Tell us about how that went, and then tell us about being in France during the heat wave.
Well, first of all, the academy went famously, as it always does, and we are now in a position where the number of people who want to come to this always exceeds the number of places that we have available. We have only 20 places, and already, if you can believe this, there are 9 of them that are already committed for 2004. And that means that any of the listeners who would like to do an Institute of Advanced Studies in the Defense of the Christian Faith with Craig Parton, whose book you mentioned, myself, and this coming summer it will be J.P. Moreland of Biola University, one of the foremost philosophical and scientific apologists alive today, and Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn and of Concordia University in Irvine, California. If listeners want to take part in this for 2 weeks at a very reasonable price, which is subsidized by the French government, they should very definitely get in touch with you or with Craig Parton as quickly as possible. We are next to certain that the entire constituency of this for July 2004 will be filled before the end of the calendar year. Technically, our deadline is not until the 15th of March, but there is no way in the world this is going to stay open until then. This has now become the best place in the world to study the defense of the Christian faith with the specialists in that area. And, of course, it's in the French Rhineland, so 2 weeks there is wonderful. As to the heat wave, well, providentially, this did not hit until after the academy session ended. We always have our session the mid 2 weeks of July, and normally in Strasbourg, the weather is very mild, and there's sometimes a bit of rain. This year, just at the point where the academy session ended, we got an absolutely horrendous heat wave. It was, in terms of Fahrenheit, at about 100 for the following 6 weeks. And my wife and I just returned 2 days ago to England. We survived this, but my goodness, there were 3,000 people in France who died as a result of, directly or indirectly, as a result of this heat wave. Most of them were elderly, but it was really something else. But we can reasonably promise that that kind of thing will not come about again. This was the worst situation since they began recording temperatures in France. So it was definitely a one-off situation.
Now, folks, everyone, and we have a lot of regular listeners to Issues, et cetera, both locally and nationally, who have had the opportunity to go to the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. Everyone who's been raves about their time there. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, our guest in this hour, of course, is director and professor in residence at this academy. It's held annually in Strasbourg, France. The speakers, I'll go through them one more time, for next year's academy include regular guests here on Issues, et cetera, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, Dr. J.P. Moreland, and Craig Parton. Now, if you'd like to receive a free information brochure, and you should do it quickly if you're planning on it, for the 8th Annual European Summer Study of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, here's the number to call. It's our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. We'll send you an absolutely free brochure on this academy, 1-800-737-0172. Let's go back to the phones as we talk about the U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to stay this order to remove the Monument of the Ten Commandments from the Alabama Judicial Building. Don from Thief River Falls, Minnesota, is listening on the Internet, and he's on the line. Don, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. As far as the Ten Commandments of Moses being in the courthouse, I could care less. As a matter of fact, I probably wouldn't even want them on the front lawn of our church unless Jesus was standing on top of them. But, on the other hand, to Pastor Wilkin and Dr. Montgomery, is there a deeper problem here as far as the natural law written in our hearts? Is there a denial going on here in society and in the law?
Now, that's a very good question, Don. Thank you. Do you share that concern, Dr. Montgomery?
Yes, yes. This is a very, very important question. On a deeper level, there's little doubt about the fact that the pressure to eliminate any kind of biblical or religious symbolism today stems from a demonic desire to remove the transcendent from our experience and to leave everything in a humanistic realm. I don't deny this at all. I mean, obviously, it's to the devil's advantage to have the minimum reference to Scripture and the minimum presentation of anything specifically Christian in our society. All right, fine. We should understand this. It is also the devil who engages in all kinds of efforts to remove morality and indecency from our life. But the real issue is, how can we, as Christians, handle this in the secular world in which we live? And the answer to this is, we are to increase the number of Christians in public life, on the bench, in judiciary capacity, in judicial capacities, in our legislatures. We're to increase the number of Christians through the democratic process, and we are to engage in the most intensive proclamation of the gospel and of the truth of the Scriptures in the society, and we have every opportunity to do this because it's an open society. What we must not do is to try to substitute the government for the church in this kind of activity. We must not think that we can somehow institutionalize the proclamation of Christianity. That is just a cop-out. What we're trying to do there is to get other people to do this for us, through public taxation, through putting statues up and proclamations, and this miserable business of the golden rule on classrooms, as Sam Erickson argues for it through Advocates International. That kind of thing is an utter cop-out. We have a glorious opportunity to present the gospel publicly, generally and individually through our personal witness, and that's the way to counteract this demonic attempt to eliminate Christianity from the society.
Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Next up, Sandy is calling from Alton. Sandy, thank you for waiting and welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to respectfully take an opposite view of your guest. It seems to me that the heavy hand of the federal government has superseded the choice of whether that monument should stand in Alabama over the citizenry. It also seems to me that that monument is truly an expression of the free exercise portion of that clause by Alabamian citizens. And if it would even come to a referendum, let it be.
Right,
let it be decided. And I see it in that regard.
Okay, Sandy. Dr. Montgomery, your response.
Okay, that's a very clear presentation of the position taken by most evangelicals on this. I think it is dead wrong. If you were a Buddhist in Alabama, I don't think there are very many, but if you were, I don't believe you would want your tax money to go to the provision of this monument or the maintenance of it. And I don't think that you should have your money spent that way. I don't think it's a question of referendum. It isn't a question of majority vote. It's a question of what the Constitution of the United States says. And the Constitution will not have an establishment of any one religious position. It's as simple as that. The only way to avoid that would be to modify the Constitution so as to create, as we have here in England, a Christian country, at least in principle. But, of course, the irony there is that in England, because you have the same secular atmosphere that you have in the United States, what that results in is a denaturing of Christian faith so that you can have homosexual bishops and all sorts of nonsense that take place within the church. So that's not the way to solve it. As far as the federal government issue, I realize that any good Southerner is convinced that the federal government has completely swallowed up states' rights. But the fact is that, I'm sorry to say this, but you Southerners lost the Civil War, and you are now in a position where you simply have to put up with a federal government. The only thing that would have prevented that would have been secession, but secession is now not possible, and so you're living in the United States, and you're going to have to put up with the U.S. Constitution, like it or not.
Now, someone's going to say at this point, perhaps, okay, Dr. Montgomery, I understand that there should be some kind of separation of church and state, and I do understand that that is a fair interpretation of the non-establishment clause in the First Amendment of the Constitution, but that concept and idea put forth there was never meant to curtail our religious freedom, and that's what this is, that's the issue here. People aren't being allowed to exercise their religious freedom by putting this monument in the courthouse. How do you respond?
Well, one is not allowed to exercise his or her religious freedom to the detriment of another citizen whose religious position doesn't happen to be the same. That's the point. This is the old principle that that my rights end where your nose begins. We can flail around if we'd like to, but if this results in smashing other person's nose, we're not allowed to do this. And we can preach the gospel fully as private citizens and through our churches, but what we cannot do is to insist that that tax money go to support our position when there are people who disagree with that position and have the right to do so, and who are also paying taxes.
So let's see if we can at least entertain a scenario here, Dr. Montgomery. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that that this monument were there and no one were challenging it, on the basis of the logic that put that monument there, and that would be largely the logic employed by Justice Roy Moore, on the basis of the logic that put the monument there in the courthouse, wouldn't it be equally legitimate if there were also a judge who succeeded Justice Moore, who was a Muslim, say for instance, and he wanted to have another equally weighty monument placed next to that one that included verses of the Quran? Would the same logic allow him to do the same thing?
It certainly would. It certainly would. That demonstrates, as I think a prior caller was emphasizing, that illustrates the illogic of this kind of thing. You see, the situation is that for 150 years, practically everybody in the United States was Christian, and so all sorts of things went on which constitutionally were not really legitimate. When I grew up in the United States, we had prayers in the public schools and Bible reading and all sorts of stuff like this, and nobody objected. I mean, in a small town in which I grew up, I don't think that there was a single non-Christian. There were plenty of pagans. There were plenty of people who certainly were not Christians in the biblical sense, but they were not members of other religions. But since that time, the situation in the United States has become so pluralistic that you do have Muslims and Hindus and sectarians of one sort and another. And if you allow one religious position to do this, even though it covers 90% of the populace, then, of course, there's not going to be any argument in reference to other religious monuments and the like that would be utterly obnoxious to Christians.
Let's go back to the phones. Jack is calling from his car. Jack, welcome to Issues Etc.
Yeah, I'll make this short and sweet because I know we're short on time. I think we're going down a slippery slope when we say that we have to be accommodating so much so to other religions that we take the very mention of God or the foundation of our moral law out of the public sphere. I think that what would be next is our coinage in this country. There are various states that still have "In God We Trust" as a part of their motto. I think that we're just opening ourselves up to the continued vacating of God in our society. And I support Judge Moore, and I understand that you're not pushing this on anyone, but this is a part of who we are. This is a part of our fabric of our country. And I think we need to make a stand.
Jack, thank you for the call. Your response, Dr. Montgomery?
Well, it's certainly part of the fabric of that particular caller's country, and most of the listeners to this program would share that perspective. But the issue is whether or not that can be forced upon a pluralistic nation. The only way that legally it's possible for this kind of thing to take place is to modify the Constitution of the United States to say that Christianity is the established religion of the United States, or biblical religion is the established religion of the United States. If that were done, there would be no problem with this. Over here in England, at Christmas time, we have the nativity sets and the creches and that sort of thing put up in the at public expense. The United States reacted, the Founding Fathers reacted against the establishment of any one religious position. And I don't think they realize the full consequences of this. But today, those consequences are perfectly clear. And instead of trying to prevent a slippery slope, which can't be prevented legally because of the nature of the Constitution of the United States, the thing to do is to counteract the slippery slope by the kind of dynamic church life and personal witness which all of us ought to be doing. Instead of recriminating about not having a 5,300-pound granite monument in Alabama, for heaven's sake, why don't we spend our time, our energy, and our money out there actively, dynamically, preaching the gospel and presenting the evidence for the truth of the faith?
My final question, Dr. Montgomery, has to do with Judge Moore himself. He is refusing to abide by the court's ruling. There probably will be fines incurred, probably to the tune of about $5,000 a day. Are his actions refusing to follow the court's directives, is this a genuine case of justified Christian civil disobedience?
I don't think so, because the scriptures do not demand that we put up granite monuments to the Ten Commandments or anything roughly resembling it. Therefore, it seems to me that Judge Moore, in spite of his clear Christian convictions, is violating Romans 13. He's not being subject to the higher powers in all things, where this is a Supreme Court or a federal court judgment against him. He needs to be subject to the law. And I think that's the reason why the associate justices there have said that even though they belong to the same political party he does, and even though they would in general favor his religious orientation, that they simply cannot maintain this monument. It seems to me that Judge Moore has misunderstood what a biblical command expects. You know, Jesus' last words were not put up a granite monument to the Ten Commandments, or even go out and preach the Ten Commandments. His final word to us was, go and preach the gospel, the good news of the death and resurrection. Go and preach the gospel to every creature. That's what we ought to be doing. Judge Moore ought to be concentrating on that, it seems to me, rather than on the Ten Commandments.
If you begin with, and we have to have this answer very quickly, if you begin with the false presupposition that this is a Christian nation, the United States is, doesn't it make sense that you'd be putting up granite monuments and be staging these kind of things against court directives?
Oh, sure. Sure it does. And the trouble is with the fundamental assumption. The Christian influence on the United States and its founding is gigantic, but that's not the same thing as a legally established Christian nation. The United States is not this. It is a nation where the freedom to present Christianity is maximized. And if Christians could get that straight and focus on the opportunities available to them as a result of this, we'd all be immensely better off.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, thank you again for being our guest and for staying the extra time with us on Issues Etc.
Blessings.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Luton in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and the History of Christian Thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana. He is author and editor of over 50 books, including Christ Our Advocate. This is a book that you can purchase by calling the Canadian Institute for Law, Theology, and Public Policy. Here's their number. It's 780-461-3076. That's 780-461-3076. Or you can find information on Christ Our Advocate on the internet at www.cil.tpp.com. Here it is again, www.cil.tpp.com. The phone number again, area code 780-461-3076. One last reminder, folks, there's going to be a car wash fundraiser tomorrow afternoon in Arnold for a Son of a Faithful Issues Etc. listener, Kathy from St. Charles. The proceeds will be used to purchase a sensory room for her son. That's tomorrow afternoon from 3 to 7 at 1315 Missouri State Road in Arnold, Missouri. For more information, call 636-282-3424. 636-282-3424. Now, if you can't show up for the car wash in Arnold tomorrow, you can still donate to this cause. Here's an address where you can send anything you'd like to donate to help this build this sensory room for Kathy's son. It's Trinity Lutheran Church, attention, Nathan's Case, 4795 North Highway 64, St. Charles, Missouri, 63301. The address one more time, Trinity Lutheran Church, attention, Nathan's Case, 4795 North Highway 64, St. Charles, Missouri, 63301. Tomorrow on the program, a two-hour discussion with Dr. Jay Bujaszewski. He is professor of philosophy and government at the University of Texas in Austin. He's got a book called What We Can't Not Know. We'll be talking to him about answering the moral skeptic. Then, Sunday night on the program, be sure to listen, 91.5 FM here in St. Louis, 10 o'clock Sunday night. We'll be talking about campus ministry with Pastor Marcus Zill. He's campus pastor at the University of Wyoming. That is, what did I say? Did I say the right thing? 10 to 11, Sunday night on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. Tomorrow, be sure to tune in for that two-hour discussion. How do you answer the moral skeptic? The moral skeptic who doesn't believe that there is any innate knowledge of good or evil. The person who looks at that monument there and says, not only are there no Ten Commandments, it's not shouldn't be written in stone, it's not even written on my heart. Well, Dr. Jay Bujaszewski says, there are some things we can't not know. God has indeed inscribed his will upon the heart of every human being. It's how he holds us accountable in the end and is just when he judges. And that's something not only that we can't not know, but we can't deny either. You'll hear about that tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.